Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you today as we continue our fun week as we discuss movies. Movies for families, for kids, for teens, for college students. We've had a great week so far. We're right in the middle of the week and a great topic for today as we get into another movie. Looking forward to discussing that with our friend from Kalkaska, Michigan. So if you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so by calling us at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or if you want to email a question or comment, you can do that. Just send an email to family@kfuo.org. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting our show. And if you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, go to the sponsors section, click on the CUW logo. That'll take you to their page. You can learn about all that CUW has to offer. I want to say welcome to our guest today, Pastor Chad Hoover from St. Paul Lutheran Church in Kalkaska, Michigan. Welcome, Pastor Hoover.
Hello, Andy.
Did I get it? Did I get it right? Is it Kalkaska? Is that the way the locals pronounce it?
That is correct.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, good job.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us today. Looking forward to talking about Superman with you today.
Awesome.
So, tell us a little bit about St. Paul and about you and the Hoover family.
Well, Kalkaska, Michigan, is a small rural community about 25 miles from Traverse City, Michigan. And Traverse City is an area that's talked about quite a lot in travel magazines. Great place to travel, great place to vacation. And Kalkaska kind of reaps the benefits of that because it's also a great area to live. So we're very fortunate to have a call here to serve St. Paul Lutheran Church, and our family really enjoys the area.
Great. And so the Hoover family is a pretty big family.
Well, by today's standards, I suppose you could say so. We have, my wife, Andrea, and I have four children, ranging in ages from 6 to 12, and every 2 years, 6, 8, 10, 12. That's the ages of our four kids. We've got two girls, they're the older two, and then two sons, they're the younger two.
And the Hoover family is quite a diverse and talented family. You've got your own cast and crew there. I always see great pictures of, especially around Halloween, of all the pictures of the family dressed up with all kinds of characters. So I think probably the best one was The Incredibles. And
oh,
I think
yeah.
that's what qualified you to discuss Superman today.
Oh, good. Yeah. we try and do a theme for Halloween costumes because it's fun to go as an ensemble. My daughters, for a number of years, have been saying they're done with the team. But we've been able to talk them into it the last couple of years. This year, this coming Halloween, I don't think it's going to work with the girls. They've got their own ideas. And so the boys and I and my wife might have to do something just the four of us.
Aww. Yeah. Family traditions are just falling apart.
Yeah.
Huh? Those teen years, that'll do it.
Yep.
So the movie time, does the Hoover family have, do you have some favorite movies? Obviously, I know that Superman is one that you really wanted to talk about today, but do you have favorite movies that the Hoover family likes to watch together?
We do. And you know, what my wife and I have enjoyed is we've pulled out some of the old ones that we enjoyed as kids or even as young adults that would be appropriate for them, and we've showed them to them. And sometimes it's a hit, and sometimes it's a big miss. The one that was actually quite a hit with our kids, and I think you're talking about this later this week, is The Princess Bride.
We are.
Yeah. Oh, my kids love that movie, and we actually, one good thing about movies and a good movie like The Princess Bride that's so quotable is that in certain situations, one of the kids or somebody from our family will quote that movie, and everybody just starts laughing because it's something that does kind of create a bond for a family to sit down and watch a good movie that's going to have some humor in it, or maybe have some things that are going to be good to talk about with the family. But we love The Princess Bride. That's one that we've watched a couple of times with them already.
Yeah, there are a lot of great quotes from that movie. I don't know how we're going to pack it all into 1 hour. But.
Oh, yeah.
So the family enjoys movies, some of your old favorites, and that's what my wife likes too. We like to pull out older movies, especially when we're expecting our first child soon. So he's probably going to be inundated with all kinds of old movies that we grew up on,
right.
and probably not too familiar with all the current movies, but
yeah.
All the old movies, and looking forward to spending some time just enjoying those movies. So after you watch a movie, do some of those movies lead to good conversations?
Sometimes they do, and to tell you the truth, I mean, when you first contacted me about doing this topic on the radio, I started thinking about, well, do we talk about movies after we watch them? And I think a lot of times we just watch the movie for entertainment value.
Sure.
I mean, it's an entertaining thing. It's a fun thing for our family to do. I think sometimes there may be opportunities to talk about things that are maybe a little more pressing, or maybe there are things that are happening in the movie that the kids don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so we end up talking about things. Well, an example of that would be we've watched old I Love Lucy episodes with our kids, which they find to be absolutely hilarious. But this takes place in the 50s, and it's a very different culture. And so it gives us an opportunity to talk about, well, the role of women in society, especially at that time, and how it's different then as opposed mm-hmm. to how it is now. And even the fact that that Ricky Ricardo is Cuban, what did that mean at the time? And the fact that they smoke a lot on that show, and we had to talk about that with our kids. So there are opportunities to talk about things like that. And then even with some other movies that have come out more recently, like we just watched with our daughters not too long ago, the movie Remember the Titans. And this is a movie that deals with race relationships mm-hmm. with a high school football team where they've integrated the school in the 70s so that the black students and the white students are coming together, and they're now on the same football team, and this is causing a lot of turmoil for the team and for the coaches, and the one coach was displaced. And we had to talk about all this with our daughters because they had no idea, really, that this sort of thing actually happened in our society and in our culture. So it really opens the door for some of those kinds of discussions.
So that it really makes history real for kids, especially when you have movies like that are based on, a historical period that you can actually talk about history, and it's not something that's just limited to textbooks. Then they realize
right.
it's not just something I'm reading about at school, but this actually happened, and this really affected people, and this,
yeah.
this really shaped who people were.
Yes. So. And it's interesting because with a movie like Remember the Titans, it was a modern movie, but was talking about a historical time, 30 mm-hmm. years ago. But whereas you're looking at something that was actually made in the 50s, it's not a commentary on the 50s. It's actually just the 50s.
Right.
So it's a different perspective there, too. It's kind of like not revisionist history in that regard, too. It's just like, this is what it is, and here's how it's being presented at the time. And from our viewpoint, we can now look at it and say, wow, that's very different than our world today.
Absolutely. It wasn't created with filters, the filters that we put on it today if we were to
right,
create it
exactly.
today.
And we would. We absolutely would. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you chose, when we were talking about movies to discuss this week, you chose Superman. Why did you choose Superman?
A couple of reasons. First of all, it was a new movie that was out in theaters, Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
Not new enough to the sense that it was actually still in theaters. That was the problem that I found. I hadn't seen the movie yet, and I thought, boy, what a great idea. I'll say I'm going to go on the radio and talk about a movie that I haven't seen yet, which will force me to go see the movie. Problem being, it's not in theaters anymore, but good news is we found it at a second run theater while we were vacationing in southern Wisconsin. So we were able to go see the movie in the theaters at a second run theater.
And you were like taking notes in the dark.
I was almost like thinking, oh, am I not going to enjoy the movie because I'm going to be looking for all of these things that I can talk about? But no, I said, no, I'm just going to order my popcorn and my soda and I'm going to enjoy the movie. And that's what I ended up doing. I didn't think too much about what was going on, just wanted to watch the movie.
Sure.
And enjoy it. And to tell you the truth, I did enjoy it. It was, I enjoyed the movie, but yet I'm a comic book movie guy. I love movies like this.
What did you like about it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because what we were just talking about as far as how movies or how television or media was different 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 mm-hmm. years ago, the epitome of the Superman movie is, of course, the 1978 Superman the movie with Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. And this is a very different time period from today. And so this is a very different Superman. It's a very different movie. It kind of tells the same story, kind of, as Superman 1 and Superman 2 that were released in the late 70s, early 80s. But yet it's updated. So the effects are better. The way in which the costume is better. He doesn't look like he's wearing tights and underwear. So it's just a better movie in that sense that it's been updated a little bit. But I also liked some of the sci-fi aspects of this movie that they brought into the screenplay and into the production, because it really was more like a science fiction movie. There was a lot of alien talk, you know, alien planet, alien amongst us type talk. Whereas the first Superman, you know, watching that movie as a kid, I don't think I much thought about Superman as being an alien, but he is. You know, he's not from around here. And this movie really focused on that and showed kind of the fears that the people, the humans, would have knowing that there's an alien in their midst. And so that was kind of interesting to see that aspect of it. And just the story itself, I thought, was a little more cohesive than the old Superman movies. Those movies, I think, spent a lot of time. I got the pitch line for the original Superman movie, "You'll believe a man can fly." And like, woo, everybody was wowed by the special effects. Whereas today, and actually with this new movie, I was kind of like, oh, these are making me a little dizzy, these special effects, because there was so much of it, and there was so much fast flying and fast fighting and fast action that it was a little, it made me a little dizzy at times, like, wow, this is really fast. But it also made it a little bit more, I don't want to say realistic, but it was kind of gritty. You know, it was a little more realistic. It was a little more down to earth versus the older Superman movies.
Well, let's get into the story. You point out that Superman is an alien. Quite often we think of aliens, you know, growing up as a kid, to hear that word alien, you always think of like ugly creatures from some other planet, you know, as depicted in a lot of sci-fi movies. But, you know, the term alien has you know, more meanings than just from another planet, just from not around here, from, you know, right, from another country. Develop that. Give us a little bit more of the story.
Sure. Well, and you know, and to kind of go back to, and that's why when I wanted to just watch the movie, you know, but then since seeing the movie, I've been looking at all sorts of things that I could find as far as news stories about this movie. I subscribe to Entertainment Weekly, and I was reading all the old articles about the movie, and there's a lot. You know, Superman is an old story. I mean, as far as when he first appeared on the comic book scene back in 1938. So this is an old story, and it's actually a story that has evolved over time. Because when Superman first appeared in Action Comics in 1938, he was not necessarily a guy who was an alien. He was not necessarily a guy who could fly. He was a guy who could jump really high. You know, he had these superhuman powers, but I don't know that they explicitly stated that he was actually an alien or someone from not around here. Mm-hmm. These are things that over the course of the comics and over the course of the different incarnations of Superman, like in the 1950s, they made or maybe the 40s, they made a cartoon serial about him. And they said, you know, having Superman on the static comic book page, seeing him jump over a building is pretty fantastic, but watching that in a cartoon, it kind of thinks, well, maybe he should fly. And so these guys decided he should fly, and so they said, good idea, let's have him fly. And then ever since then, Superman could fly. So we see Superman evolving over time, and I think this movie kind of does the same thing. It takes a lot of the things that we know to be true about Superman, and it kind of adds to the mythology of him a little bit. And actually, one thing, you know, I guess, the story is this, you know, Superman is from Krypton, which is a planet outside of our solar system. His home planet is dying, and his parents put him in a little vessel, a little spaceship, and sent him to Earth, so that he can survive while his planet is being destroyed. And he would be like the last of the Kryptonians. And he would be bring the hope of Krypton and the hope of Earth, you know, to those people. And that they knew, I don't know how exactly, they knew that he'd be stronger on Earth, that he'd be able to do things that the other people couldn't do. But, you know, and that's whereas in the old movies, they didn't really explain how that was, that Superman could do these things. But in this movie, that's why I like the sci-fi aspect. They really explain why Superman was strong, why he could fly, why he had heat vision, why he had X-ray vision, and all these things that have developed over time in the Superman mythos, they kind of explained in this movie as just being, here's why. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. How should Lutherans, we've got a good picture of the story now, and
sure.
we'll break it down a little bit. Before we even get further into the story, how should Christians, specifically Lutherans, how should we approach movies? How does our worldview affect or impact the whole topic of movies and watching movies?
Well, obviously, when you watch a movie, I mean, you're filling your senses with stuff, you know, with the images on the screen, with the words that are coming across, with the themes and the ideas that are being presented in the movie. So we ought to be careful with what we put into our brain, and what, because you know, you can't necessarily unsee something you've seen. So you should be aware of what it is that we're doing, you know, that we're putting in.
So true. Many a movies I've said, I'll never get that hour and a half back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We don't, you know, we don't necessarily want to put some of that garbage in. But also we understand too that we do have filters, and we do have a different worldview as Christians and as Lutherans than the rest of the world has. So we ought to watch things keeping that worldview in mind. And I think sometimes too that worldview is beneficial for me, and even for my wife. As we sit down and watch a TV show or a movie, we have a different perspective on things, especially having to do with forgiveness or with salvation, or even, you know, to do with a different characteristics of a character or sin. You know, we have a different outlook and a different viewpoint of those. And sometimes we kind of take those things and apply them to the movies that we see, and we might get a different message out of the movie than somebody who doesn't have that same worldview. So
sure, I could see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, with Superman, you know, an example would be the Christ-like parallels of Superman that are exposed in this movie. And in fact, this is not by accident, and this is what really kind of surprised me. I kind of knew going in, you know, that Superman is kind of like people have said, a Jesus-like figure. He's, you know, there are all these aspects of Superman's story that maybe are parallels to Jesus' story. But then I was surprised to see that the director of this movie, Zack Snyder, told CNN that that is the tried and true Superman metaphor for Jesus. Now, I don't think Zack Snyder is a Christian, and I don't think that he necessarily understands everything about Christianity that I do, but I thought that was interesting anyway, that he's recognizing these parallels. And then I went back and looked even at the 2006 Superman Returns movie that Bryan Singer directed, and he's Jewish, and he said the same thing about Jesus, that there are these parallels to the life of Christ with Jesus, with Superman.
Stephen Schwartz wrote Godspell, so.
Oh, yes, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the interesting thing, and that's one of the things that I did want to talk about today, was how this movie, at least, wanted to present Superman as a Christ-like figure, mm-hmm. and what sort of things are in the movie that we could say, hey, that's pretty obvious as far as the parallel they're trying to draw there. But then I also, as I was digging more deeply into this, realized that, you know, Superman is not Jesus. He's not even close to Jesus, really. And so I kind of wanted to talk about that, too, because I found that to be rather intriguing. Some of the things that I had found and just my own conversations with my family after watching this movie. How is Superman different from Jesus? Yeah, you can draw parallels and comparisons, but how is he different? Because that's pretty important to know, too.
Right.
And then some of the, you know, society's misconceptions of Jesus that would make them draw some parallels between the two that maybe really don't exist.
And that was what I was going to ask. Do you think that they created this parallel of Jesus, the Superman character as a parallel of Jesus, based on what they think people will think, who they think Jesus is?
I do, yes. I do think that.
Rather than who Jesus really is,
exactly.
It's based on who they think people will think Jesus is.
Right. In fact, I found an article on entertainmentweekly.com called, this is the title of the article on it, and it blew me away. This is the title: Why Superman of Man of Steel is the Jesus We Wish Jesus Would Be. Isn't that interesting? And it goes through the kind of the story of the movie, and it basically says how, yeah, Superman is not like Jesus, but we wish Jesus was more like Superman. Isn't that nuts?
I don't know if there's a better definition of idolatry.
I'll highlight some of those things if we've got time.
Sure.
I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
We've got a couple of minutes before we go to break.
Just already?
Start. Yeah. We'll go to break here in about 3 minutes. But
okay.
The first item off that list.
Sure. Well, his name, first of all, his name is Kal-El. A rough translation of Kal-El in the Hebrew language would be voice of God. And his father is Jor-El. And so we see that name El in the Old Testament for names of God. It usually include that moniker El. And so that's the comic book coming through. And so obviously the creators of the comic book had some sort of divine origins in mind for Superman.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing would be that he's a special child, not only on Krypton, or on Earth, but also on Krypton. In the movie, and this was something new to the movie that I don't know if it's been a part of any of the comic books or not, because I truthfully don't read the comic books, but they say several times that Kal-El was the first natural-born child in Krypton's history for centuries. He's the first one. All the rest of them were, like, harvested, which was weird. They were all harvested, like, through this codex thing, and so they were harvested to have certain characteristics and traits to benefit the society. But Kal-El was different. He was unlike them because he was actually born of a mother and a father. So his birth is a little different than the birth of everyone else on his planet. And so we could draw parallels between Jesus and Kal-El in that way, that his birth was a little different too, that he didn't have an earthly father, but that he was conceived by the Holy Spirit, that his father is in heaven. So a little kind of backward parallelism there. Thirdly, seeing that the planet was going to be destroyed, Jor-El decides to send his son to Earth. And he says, even before he sends them, that he'll be like a god to them, because he knows that he will have these extraordinary powers. And they explain that in the movie a little bit, too, saying that Earth's sun is younger than our sun, and you'll soak in its radiation, and it'll make your muscles very strong, and increase your senses or heighten your senses or something like that. And so he has these extraordinary powers on Earth. And so we see that parallels Jesus too, as far as the fact that he has extraordinary powers. How are we doing on time? Do we need to...
About 1 minute left before we go to break.
All right. The other things is too that this movie highlights Clark Kent's life in three different ages. First, his birth. Next, when he's 12 years old. And then lastly, as an adult, when he's 33 years old. I don't think those were by mistake as far as the filmmakers were concerned. When we look at the Bible, when do we see the stories that we know of Jesus? When he's born, when he's 12 years old in the temple, and when he's 30 years old, and when he's crucified at about 33 years old. And this is based on Christian tradition as far as how we know how old Jesus was. But
mm-hmm.
they make a very pointed argument in the movie to say that Superman is 33 years old. Well, they didn't have to say that, so it's interesting. You know, these are ways in which they're trying to parallel Superman to Jesus. A couple other things: Jor-El's spirit or his consciousness appears later in the movie, which is kind of like the Holy Spirit. So, whereas Jor-El, his father, sends his son to Earth, he's not alone on Earth. He has this consciousness of his father, this spirit of the father who's guiding him along once he figures out who he is.
We'll go to break now, okay. But when we come back from break, I want to talk about why you think they chose to parallel Jesus in this movie. So
Great,
stick around for more with Pastor Chad Hoover right here on Faith and Family as we discuss Superman.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Gardasil is a vaccine given to young girls to protect them from certain types of sexually transmitted diseases. I've been concerned about the potential dangers of the drug, and with good reason. The British Medical Journal has reported a healthy 16-year-old girl became infertile from Gardasil. She got the vaccine in the fall, and by the next January, her periods were increasingly irregular. 2 years after the vaccine, she suffered from premature ovarian failure, documented by her physician. The appalling thing is, Merck, the maker of the drug, hasn't tested the effect this drug has on the ovaries of girls. Yet they're lobbying governments around the world to make it mandatory for school children. They've demonstrated a willingness to put money over girls' health and fertility.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS recognized service organization.
Listeners from around the globe hear the Christ-centered message of Worldwide KFUO.
I am from the province of Ontario in Canada. I listen to your station, KFUO, on my laptop at work.
With today's internet technologies, you can listen on your computers, laptops, and Wi-Fi radios.
26 states are listening to us, and 14 countries, Israel is listening. Switzerland, Kenya, and even Italy.
You can listen on the go, even through your car radios, with your smartphones, podcast players, and tablets.
Hi. Wanted to call and say thanks for broadcasting worship services. I'm driving home, about a 45-minute drive. Wanted to hear something uplifting and soothing, and flip the dial, and worship service is just exactly what I needed.
Listen worldwide to the messenger of good news. KFUO at KFUO.org.
The State Department says U.S. Envoy Robert King will travel to North Korea on Friday to seek the release of an American sentenced to 15 years hard labor. Congressman Rick Larson, whose Seattle area district is home to Kenneth Bay's family, says
there are no promises, I guess, from the North Korean government that Kenneth Bay will be leaving with Ambassador King, but the fact that he's been allowed to go into the country for the specific purpose of approaching the Korean government directly about Kenneth Bay, that is actually really good news.
The State Department says King will request a pardon for the 45-year-old Bay, a tour operator and Christian missionary who's been in ill health since being arrested and accused of subversion.
They detained him. They see religion as a threat to the government in North Korea, and looks like they wanted to make Kenneth an example.
Larson says if Bay is released this weekend,
it would be a heck of a Labor Day for the Bay family, probably unlike any other three-day holiday that they've ever had.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are discussing the Superman movies with Pastor Chad Hoover from St. Paul in Kalkaska, Michigan. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so. Give us a call here in the studio at 314-821-8255. 800-730-0850, or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. Or if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that. You can send us a question or comment at family@kfuo.org. Pastor Hoover, before we went to break, we were talking about the parallels of the Superman character, paralleling Jesus in some ways, and more so paralleling Jesus as society and culture perceives him rather right. than as the true Jesus. And as we were talking about that, I thought, I just caught some, an excerpt from, Avatar, because I'm just that far behind in watching movies, and caught a couple of scenes from Avatar recently and noticed that I picked up on the character or the deity that they refer to in that movie. And you'd mentioned that Kal-El, being, you know, a loose translation for God in the Superman movie, the deity in Avatar is Ewa, which I was rearranging the syllables and the letters, and I thought, that kind of reminds me of Yahweh, and I wonder if that was intentional or not in that movie. I have no idea. I haven't done any research on it, but I thought it was very interesting. So before we went to break, we were talking about Jesus being a parallel, and want to get your thoughts on why you think they chose to use that parallel and even be open about it.
Sure. Well, something that kind of astonished me is, you know, the fact that I was reading that this director Zack Snyder was very open about that, yes. But then I found out also that Warner Brothers, who produced the movie, hired a media outlet, Grace Hill Media, to kind of cater to the Christian market, and they've actually produced resources for pastors and for churches to have Bible studies based upon this movie, which I find fascinating because they're seeing that there's a Christian market out there that they want to try and reach. But it's also interesting because, as we've already kind of stated, I don't know that they fully understand who Jesus is or what he has done and how Superman really pales in comparison to what Christ has done for us. You know, some of the things, the question you asked was, why would they then use this story of Jesus kind of, or parallel this story of Jesus mm-hmm. with Superman? I think some of it is because the story lends itself to that, as far as Superman's origins within the comic books and the way in which he was written over time, those parallels were just easily made. You could make those parallels. The other thing is the creators of Superman, Jerry Siegel and Joel Shuster, back in the 1930s, were Jewish immigrants to this country, or their parents were immigrants, but they were Jewish. And so perhaps the story of Jesus isn't so much paralleling, or the story of Superman isn't so much paralleling the story of Jesus, but maybe more the story of Joseph, of Moses, because that seems to make a little bit more sense when you look at who he is and what he has done in the Superman mythos, comparing him to Moses. Moses' parents putting him in a basket, sending him right. down the river, adopted by these foreigners, giving him the name Moses, which wasn't the name his parents gave him. We don't know the name his parents gave him, but it mm-hmm. wasn't Moses. You know, giving him this Egyptian name, him being raised as an Egyptian, knowing that he wasn't an Egyptian, and then going on later to become like the hero who would save his people from slavery in Egypt and leading them out of slavery. Superman's story does more closely parallel Moses than it does Jesus. But when you look at Jesus, you do see that there's a little bit of parallel between the story of Moses and Jesus, too.
Sure.
So you can draw those parallels, too. And I think some of it is that as Christians are reading the comic books, we see those parallels. We almost can't help it. But it's fascinating that the director of this movie would decide to very explicitly put some of these things in. And some of the explicit, one of the most explicit things, well, there's two of them really, is there's one point in the movie where the big baddie in this movie is General Zod. He's also from Krypton. And he comes to Earth because he needs to retrieve the information that Superman has within his cells that would be like the life of Krypton. He's going to bring Krypton back. He's going to make, you know, all the genetic information for the Kryptonians that were supposed to be born is in Superman's cells because his father put it there and sent him to Earth. So Zod's got to come get it. And so he comes to get it, and he pulls Superman upon his ship that's orbiting the Earth because Superman needs to surrender because otherwise Zod will destroy the Earth. And so Clark Kent has to decide, what do I do? Do I surrender to Zod? Do I surrender to the people, give myself up, go to Zod, let him take me for the sake of humanity to save them, you know, to kind of sacrifice himself? So that was a very Jesus moment. And in fact, before he did it, he goes into a church and he talks to, I have to assume it's a priest, even though he's wearing a collar that looks exactly like mine. I still think he's a Roman Catholic priest in the movie. I don't know, maybe he was Lutheran. But he's in the church, and there's on the stained glass windows a scene of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And we know what Jesus was doing in the Garden of Gethsemane. He was praying to God the Father to say, if it's possible for this cup to pass from me, please do so. And this is what Jesus is asking the priest or the pastor. He's saying, I'm the one that Zod's looking for. I'm the Kryptonian who's hiding among you, and I need to either give myself up or just keep hiding, and I don't know what to do. And the priest gives him some okay advice, but basically says, you need to take a leap of faith. And I'm like, a leap of faith in what? Basically what he's saying, which is not at all true, is humanity worth saving? Is kind of the big question that Superman's faced with. Is humanity worth saving? You must put your faith in humanity. And that's the big theme. And that's where I'm like, big miss. That is not Jesus. I mean, as far as putting his faith in humanity, I mean, who are we in comparison to God? We are sinful human beings who have nothing to offer God in our sin. But it's not that Jesus puts his faith in us, but God loves us and values us and sends his son to save us because he wants to restore what was broken by sin. This is not what Superman's doing. But yet, when Superman surrenders to Zod, his holy ghost-like father frees him from the ship, and he drifts off. And as he's drifting off down to Earth, you know, his father says, "You can save them. You can save them all." And Superman's like, "Yes, I'm going to go save the Earth from Zod and his bad guys." And as he's floating out of the ship, he's putting his arms out like he's on the cross. And I'm like, "Oh boy." They're pushing it, this whole imagery of Jesus and Superman. But it falls short. It falls way short for a number of reasons.
Sure. But I could see how it could provide some good conversations with like middle school students, with middle school kids, asking, do you see any parallels? How is this character different than real Jesus?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, as far as using the movie as a stepping stool to telling people who Jesus really is, then yeah, you can use this movie to do that. I think it offers itself up to do that. There's a lot of things that we can use that would lead us to that point.
Where does kryptonite fit in all this?
Oh, boy. I haven't thought about that question. And the funny thing is, kryptonite doesn't really appear in this movie.
Really?
In the form of kryptonite. yeah, it's interesting because there's a point where he goes onto Zod's spaceship, and the atmosphere of the spaceship is like a Kryptonian atmosphere, and he's weak in the spaceship because he's not used to the Kryptonian atmosphere. I thought that was pretty fascinating. But there's no kryptonite in this movie. Interesting.
No green glowing like crystals or anything like that?
No, not in this movie. I'm sure it'll make its appearance in the sequel.
Yeah. Well, so there's a parallel of Jesus. Are there any other parallel? You said maybe a parallel of the Holy Spirit. And you said this character could parallel Moses. Any other parallels that you see or any other metaphors?
Not that I found in watching the movie, nothing that was blaringly obvious. the one thing that I did, knowing, you know, going into the movie knowing, okay, I'm going to be looking for how Superman's like Jesus in this movie. then, of course, the other side of that is, how is Superman not like Jesus? You know, that as I'm watching the movie, I'm kind of picking parts. Well, that's not like Jesus. And there's a couple of things that are happening in this movie show clearly that he's not Jesus.
Such
as, first of all, he's not God. He's not God. His, his father sends him to Earth, and he says he will be like a god to them, but he's not God. He, in many senses of his being, he's basically a human. I mean, everything about him is that he's a human being. You know, he's from Krypton, so he's this alien being, but he's not God.
But he has all these powers.
But he has all these powers, and that's the interesting thing about the movie too, is we don't see Superman in his costume flying around until about 45 or 50 minutes into the movie.
Wow.
So up until this point, he doesn't know who he is. He spends half the movie, almost, trying to figure out where he came from, why he has these powers, who he is. And then his father reveals to him when he's 12 years old that he came in this spaceship. And up until that point, he had no idea who he was. And that's very different from Jesus, because you can contrast the conversation that Clark Kent has with his earthly father about where he came from and who he is, and his earthly father says to him, I have no idea who you are, where you come from, but this is the vessel you came in, and this is all we know. We have to think it's for some high purpose, you know. But Jesus knows exactly who he is, and we see that especially in the incident where he's in the temple at the age of 12. His family goes on back, you know, home, and then they realize he's not with them, and they go back to Jerusalem to find him, and there he is in the temple, and they're like, where were you? We were worried. And he says, didn't you know that I'd be in my father's house? He knows who he is, Jesus. There's no question to him, you know, who am I? Why do I have these abilities? Why can I do these things? What, you know, he knows exactly who he is. That's not like Superman at all. The other thing is, Superman is sinful in this movie. One thing that really bothered me, maybe it shouldn't, but it did, Superman kind of has his wandering in the wilderness sequence of the movie as he spends years kind of preparing himself to be this hero by being this anonymous do-gooder, being this anonymous grunt on like a fishing vessel, or being the gopher for this military base and things like that. And then when things go bad, he steps in and helps, and then he leaves. So he's not Superman yet. He's kind of this anonymous do-gooder. But while he's doing his anonymous do-gooding, he has no way of providing for himself. And so he comes up on the shore after saving this oil rig, wearing all this tattered clothing, you know, that he was wearing in this fire. And then he looks around, and he looks on the clothesline for some clothes, and then he sees in the truck exactly what he needs, a heavy jacket, pants, shoes, everything, you know, and he takes them. He steals them. I was like, no, Superman can't steal. But he does. He steals these things. And I thought, oh, that's not good. The other thing that Superman does, and this is a big spoiler alert if anybody does not want a huge spoiler in the end of the movie, Superman breaks one of the golden rules of comic books. He kills the bad guy in the end.
Oh, wow.
And this is, I mean, as far as comic books are concerned, this is kind of the superhero code is, you do not kill. You do not take that justice into your own hands. You find another way to bring peace. But Superman kills Zod in the end of the movie, and it was actually handled quite poorly. And I say that for a number of reasons. Because, first of all, Superman is an outsider. The government and the army and those in charge still aren't quite sure if he's a good guy or a bad guy. But at one point, they say to him, this man is not our enemy. And he goes, thank you, Captain. And he flies off to save the day. You know, it's like, well, is that the authority that he's been given to deal with Zod, with using the power of the sword, as like Paul talks about in Romans 13, where that's the authority God gave to the government? Is this authority been given to Superman? I don't think so. But yet he takes that authority upon himself and kills Zod in the end. It didn't necessarily work for the movie either. I thought it was maybe not necessarily the best thing for Superman to do. There could have been a more clever way for the filmmakers to come up with defeating Zod that didn't involve him snapping his neck, which is what he does. And they show some angst. You know, Superman's like, oh, no, he killed him. But yet the next scene, he's like holding hands with Lois Lane, giving her a nice kiss goodbye. And I'm like, oh, I guess it didn't disturb you too much that you did that. But it, just before doing that, Zod is giving him this big lecture about, is he really willing to sacrifice the future of Krypton for the sake of these humans that he loves so much? And I was like, ooh, okay, they're trying to draw a parallel to Jesus here. But then I realized, you know, I don't know if he really does love these humans so much, because there was a whole two scenes in two different places where Superman is fighting against Zod and his army, and they're just bringing mass destruction upon everything. And, yeah, they're showing a building collapsing, but I don't think all the people were evacuated from that building, and yet Superman doesn't seem to care that thousands of people are dying in this building. And it was really disturbing to see that, well, this is the savior of these people, and yet he doesn't really care, or at least he didn't show us that he cared. And so, you know, it kind of, looking back at the old movies now, in Superman 2, there was a similar scene where General Zod is in Superman 2. They're fighting in Metropolis, and they start causing destruction not against Superman but against the city and the people and the inhabitants of the city. And there's a point in that fight where Superman realizes, I cannot fight them here because they're going to hurt people, and he leaves. And everyone's all thinking Superman abandoned them. But what actually happened was, is he was drawing the fight away from the people. This Superman in the new movie didn't do that. And it made me wonder, does he really care about these people? It didn't seem like he necessarily did. And so he fell short, ultimately, of being this Jesus figure, because I didn't see much compassion from this Superman for the people, or even a love for them. He was alienated by them. He was bullied by them as a child. He didn't really have much compassion for them. There were some instances where he, you know, that I liked, where he saved the bully on the school bus that crashed into the, this bully was picking on him when he was 12 and crashed into the water. He saves the school bus, and then he goes back into the water and pulls the bully up out of the water all by himself. You know, it's like, so they made it a point to show he saved everybody on that school bus, not just, you know, and the bully, he had to go back and make a special trip to save him. So that was good. But later on, as he's an adult, I didn't necessarily see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose that can be helpful, though, the fact that while there are some parallels with him as Jesus or as Moses, it was clear to you from in your Lutheran worldview that he's not Jesus. And I suppose that can be helpful to help us realize that the rest of the world doesn't see Jesus as he really is.
Right. And the thing is, too, you know, like I'd already mentioned, you know, Lex Luthor was not in this sequel, or in this movie, but I'm sure he'll be in the sequel. You know, it's like Superman saved the day today, but tomorrow there's another threat. And so when Superman saves people, he's saving their lives in the moment, but that's really all he can do. He cannot save their souls. He cannot offer them everlasting protection. He cannot offer them what Christ has offered us, and that is, to take our sin and put it upon himself and to take care of the problem on the cross by putting it to death and by burying it. You know, this is what Christ has done for us. It's not just a generic, I'll save you today, I'll make your life better and more comfortable. This is an everlasting salvation that Christ provides for us. And actually, and this is an area where, yeah, I think Superman is a better Moses in this movie as far as saving the people. And The Dark Knight, the Batman movie from 2008, I think that is probably a better parallel for Jesus in the end of that movie, The Dark Knight. And I know the other day you had Dr. Eschelbach on, and he kind of talked about this movie very briefly, saying that, you know, the Joker in this movie was just horrible as far as the destruction and the mayhem that he caused. And it's true, he was. But the end of this movie, I think, has one of the most striking parallels between the superhero and Christ of any superhero movie I've seen. Because in the end of the movie, Harvey Dent has turned bad, and he's gone on a murderous rampage, killing people. And the people don't know about it. The people of Gotham don't know about it. But Harvey Dent dies, and Batman tells Commissioner Gordon, do not tell people what Harvey Dent has done. They need him to be the icon of something good in Gotham City. You tell them that I did it. You tell them that I'm the one who killed Harvey Dent. He didn't do it. He goes, but you tell them that I did. And then he runs away, and the police are chasing him. And Commissioner Gordon's son says, why is he running, Dad? He didn't do anything wrong. And then Commissioner Gordon said, he's the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now. So we'll hunt him because he can take it, because he's not a hero. He's a silent guardian, a watchful protector, a dark knight. And that's a big spoiler for the end of the movie, so I hope everyone's seen it. But I love it because Batman, in this movie, can take it. He can take the sin of Harvey Dent upon himself and ultimately be punished for it. That is more of a parallel to Jesus than what we saw in, you know, 2.5 hours of a Man of Steel movie, in just 5 minutes at the end of that movie, where that at the end of that movie, I was cheering because I was that was fantastic. But yet, that wasn't real deliberate, and somebody without my Christian worldview would not pick that up, but I sure did. And I'm not, I know I'm not the only one who's picked that up, that this is what Christ has done for us. He's taken our sin upon himself, and that's what ultimately Batman does in the end of the movie. He takes Harvey Dent's sin, and he takes it upon himself because he can take it. And that's the same thing with Jesus. He takes our sin upon himself because he can take it, and he can defeat it for us.
So there can be Christ figures in all kinds of movies,
sure,
depending on what worldview you have when you approach the movie.
Yes.
And in the Dark Knight movie, you saw this merciful character, this character with mercy. And I suppose there are probably plenty of other movies we can see that in. The question is how, you approached it with that Christian worldview. We can't expect someone without a Christian worldview to sit down and watch these movies and obviously, instantly see the Christ figure,
yeah,
and instantly see who Christ is. So we get our theology, we get our understanding of Christ from the Word, and certainly, as you've pointed out, the Jesus parallels in these movies never really measure up truly to who Jesus truly is. So our theology has to come from the Word, but it certainly shapes our worldview as we approach these movies and can lead to good conversations. Any other movies that come to mind that besides The Dark Knight that have this character of mercy, that you've seen?
Not that I can think of right now.
Sure.
I know, and what you're saying though, as far as using movies to teach the faith. I mean, I have done that in the past. When I was doing youth work at my previous congregation, there was a whole unit where I did that, basically, where I would pull scenes from various movies and then discuss those scenes and apply them and use the Bible, ultimately pull the Bible out. Because you're right, what we know about Jesus comes to us through his revelation to us through the Word. And apart from that, we don't know who he is. So it's important for us to be in the Word and discussing the Word. We can use the movie as a jumping off point or as a point where that might be an illustration for something that we see in his Word. But ultimately, apart from his Word, we don't know who he is, and we don't know what he's done, and it's pretty fantastic. You know, it's much greater than what Superman could do, or any of the superheroes that we see in any superhero movie, because he's providing us with everlasting salvation. That it's not just saving us for today; it's saving us for an eternity.
Amen. couldn't think of a better way to wrap that up.
Awesome.
We've only got a few seconds left,
right,
but so movies can, as you pointed out, while they can provide great opportunities for talking points and conversations, they can also be just for fun, as you mentioned earlier, too.
Yes, they can.
Sometimes you could just, sit down and I wish I would have brought popcorn today, man. That would have been, I should have been bringing popcorn all week.
Well, yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, Pastor Hoover, thank you so much for your time today,
you
talking with us on Faith and Family. We wish you well, and I hope that you find some more good movies with great Christ characters in them.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Stick around. We've got some more great topics coming up this week, as tomorrow we continue our movie conversation. We'll talk with Pastor Philip Hoppe from St. Paul in Ellsworth, Kansas, as we look at, are Christian movies really Christian? Is there truly gospel in Christian movies? So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. And as Pastor Hoover pointed to, at the end of the week, we're also going to cover The Princess Bride and the traditions surrounding that. Stick around. Up next, Moments of Assurance right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.